Wine is a mocker and beer a brawler. Whoever is led astray by them is not wise. A king's wrath strikes terror like the roar of a lion. Those who anger him forfeit their lives. It is to one's honor to avoid strife, but every fool is quick to quarrel. Sluggards do not plow in season, so at harvest time they look but find nothing. The purposes of a person's heart are deep waters, but one who has insight draws them out. Many claim to have unfailing love, but a faithful person who can find? The righteous lead blameless lives, blessed are their children after them. When a king sits on his throne to judge, he winnows out all evil with his eyes. Who can say, I have kept my heart pure? I am clean and without sin. Differing weights and differing measures, the Lord detests them both. Even small children are known by their actions. So is their conduct really pure and upright? Ears that hear and eyes that see, the Lord has made them both. Do not love sleep, or you will grow poor. Stay awake, and you will have food to spare. It's no good, says the buyer. Then goes off and boasts about the purchase. Gold there is and rubies in abundance, but lips that speak knowledge are a rare jewel. Take the garment of one who puts up security for a stranger. Hold it in pledge if it is done for an outsider. Food gained by fraud tastes sweet, but one ends up with a mouth full of gravel. Plans are established by seeking advice. So if you wage war, obtain guidance. A gossip betrays a confidence, so avoid anyone who talks too much. If someone curses their father or mother, their lamp will be snuffed out in pitch darkness. An inheritance claimed too soon will not be blessed at the end. Do not say, I'll pay you back for this wrong. Wait for the Lord, and he will avenge you. The Lord detests differing weights, and dishonest scales do not please him. A person's steps are directed by the Lord. How then can anyone understand their own way? It is a trap to dedicate something rashly and only later to consider one's vows. A wise king winnows out the wicked. He drives the threshing wheel over them. The human spirit is the lamp of the Lord that sheds light on one's inmost being. Love and faithfulness keep a king safe. Through love, his throne is made secure. The glory of young men is their strength. Grey hair, the splendor of the old. Blows and wounds scrub away evil, and beatings purge the inmost being.
Good morning, church. My name is Nathan. For those of you that don't know me, I'm the director of operations here at All Souls. I take care of an amazing team of people that look after the background work that goes on during the week. So we are starting in the second week of a two-part series on Proverbs. And just to recap very quickly what Simon had to say last week, when he started talking about the concept of the ministry of the pew, what happens beyond the ministry of the word? How does that go beyond what just happens during a service? And how do we live in community side by side and allow each other to form us, shape us, and disciple us? And so today we're going a bit more niche, and I'm going to be focusing a bit on what does the ministry of the pew look like amongst generations of people. So when I was finishing school, which was in the mid-2000s, I am only the tender age of 38, people started talking about millennials. The Daily Mail had a lot to say about us. They said things like we were lazy, and they said things that we were addicted to social media, which was a whole new concept at that time. They said that we were progressives and we were snowflakes and that we were going to ruin everything. They also reminded us that if we stopped eating avocado pear, we'd end up on the housing market. And then a few years ago, I suddenly started to encounter some whippersnappers called Gen Z or Gen Zs. And suddenly I realized that the Daily Mail and its other journalistic friends had a lot to say about them as well. And the rhetoric was the same. They're lazy, they're progressive snowflakes, and if they just stop drinking coffee, they can buy a house. And I realized that this was nothing new. As Mike and the Mechanics reminded us, every generation blames the one before, and every generation worries that the one after it will finish breaking what they have started. Even Aristotle said this in 400 AD, sorry, BC, when he said that young people think they know everything because life hasn't humbled them yet. And yet, as Simon reflected last week, and if we look around us today, if we take a good look, we can see who God has gathered here in this church community, who God has put in this community of believers. Right now, in this church, you might be sitting next to someone who grew up in Lagos and found Jesus 50 years ago, or a student who met Jesus only in January this year. You could be sitting next to somebody of different generations that found Jesus in places as diverse as Hong Kong, Nairobi, Bucharest, or even Birmingham. Some come from families who have worshipped in the Anglican tradition for generations, and some of you might not even know that you're sitting in an Anglican church this morning. That's not accidental. God has made his church a tapestry of generations. But if we're honest with one another, we do tend to drift towards what is familiar. We sit with people of our own age, people who get us. And if we're not careful, the church becomes a set of clusters and silos under one roof, not a body sharing life. And that's what Proverbs 20 is about. Proverbs 20 is a set of sayings around everyday wisdom. Proverbs gathers wisdom about how life works in God's world. And several of these sayings in this particular chapter speak directly to the relationships we have between generations. And I'm hoping that this morning we'll see how we pass on legacy, how we show honor amongst generations, and how we share wisdom amongst generations. Because when these things happen, the church becomes something the world rarely sees, something countercultural. It shows a community where generations walk side by side under the lordship of Christ. Proverbs 27, verse 7 says, "The righteous who walk in his integrity, blessed are his children after him." Now, when we think of heroes of the faith, many of us think of big names. We think of Billy Grahams and Charles Spurgeons. We think of people like Samuel Crowther. But I'm going to tell you about one of the heroes of my faith. Her name was a woman called Janice Wood. And probably most of you, if any of you, have never heard of her. She was a Sunday school teacher in my little church in Cape Town. For 45 years, she diligently taught Sunday school. Most people beyond our little church didn't know who she was. She never wrote a book. She never spoke at conferences. She didn't have any letters after her name. And I only got to know her in the final 4 years of her life. And at that stage, she was battling cancer, still teaching Sunday school, but she was facing health challenges. And what struck me about Mrs. Wood was the confidence that she had. She would always say, and I heard her repeatedly say, "Whether I'm healed on this side or in eternity in the new creation, I know I will be healed." His grace is enough for me. Now, at that time, I was in my early 20s. I had faith, but I was still relatively new in it. And I didn't quite get the confidence that Mrs. Wood had. But her faith has stayed with me. More than any sermon I've ever heard, during the challenging times I have faced as I've grown up, her words have shaped me and the way that I view my faith. That's Mrs. Wood's legacy. That is legacy. And notice what brings blessing in verse 7. Verse 7 is not about a platform. It's not about a title. It's about a walk, a daily visible life of integrity. In Proverbs, the children here are quite clearly first biological, but the principle naturally extends to spiritual influence as well. The New Testament often speaks of older believers as spiritual fathers and spiritual mothers. We can see that in 1 Timothy 5. If you've been following Jesus for any length of time, someone younger is watching you. Whether you're 20 years old or whether you're 90 years old, someone is watching you. They see how you handle disappointment. They notice whether your faith holds in its integrity on Wednesday as it does on Sunday. They observe how you pray. They observe how you give. They observe how you forgive. And they observe how you persevere despite challenges. The inheritance of faith is not something that is merely taught in a Bible study or in a seminar. It is something that is forged over decades of ordinary obedience, through seasons of testing, through staying when life would have been easier if you had left it, through the slow, slow work of sanctification, that lived faith becomes a gift to those who come after us. If you're an older believer, your life is already preaching. The question isn't whether you influence younger believers. Get used to the idea that it does. The question is, what are they learning from you? And does your life show them that Jesus is worth staying for? That the gospel holds when life is hard? Does your faithfulness show that as we grow older, holding on to Jesus is not just mere survival, that it is in fact the very thing that gives you joy and that gives you meaning? Because someone is in fact watching to find that out. And if you're a younger believer, don't despise the slow work of spiritual growth. It is slow. It is hard. And in a world of instant answers, where we have everything that can happen in the blink of an eye, Proverbs reminds us that wisdom, true wisdom, takes time. We can't download maturity. AI is not going to take over spiritual maturity and what it can do. You learn it by watching. By watching faithful lives, finding believers that are further along the road than you, being humble enough to watch them, being humble enough to listen, because their faith has been tested in ways yours has not yet. But it is an inheritance that is yours to have, if you're just willing to receive it. So how do we build this honor across generations? How do we build this community where this can happen? The righteous lead blameless lives. Blessed are their children after them. I came across a book a few months ago by a professor of management studies, actually, at London Business School called Linda Grattan. She authored a book called The 100-Year Life. Her research revealed something that is quite remarkable, that for the first time in human history, many people may live close to 100 years.
This means that four or even five generations can now exist in the same workplace, family, and community. Simon reminded us last week that the oldest member of our 930 congregation is 97. The youngest may have been born in the last few months. On our ops team here at All Souls, the age difference between the youngest person on the team and the oldest person on the team is 64 years. On the PCC, the difference between the youngest person and the oldest person at All Souls is 53 years. Generations working and living side by side. But Professor Grattan points out that the organizations that flourish are those that don't just merely manage generational differences. The ones that really flourish are ones where the older individuals genuinely invest in the younger ones, and the younger ones remain genuinely curious about their elders. When the mutual exchange ceases, both sides lose something irreplaceable. What struck me is that Grattan uncovered this through just good old-fashioned management sciences, yet Proverbs articulated already 3,000 years ago. Both speak of glory. We see strength and we see wisdom, energy and experience. God designed them to work together. In verse 20, we see how Solomon warns us against despising our parents. In this context, this relates to the family, but the New Testament also calls the church a family. When contempt replaces honor, Proverbs suggests that the lamp goes out. When we dismiss those who came before us, we lose the light that would have guided us. Our culture often mocks generational differences, but when the church echoes this, we forfeit something God intended for our good. There is no place for an okay boomer culture in the church. Because verse 29 goes and offers us the balanced view. The young possess strength. The old have splendor. Neither is superior. Proverbs is not talking about superior authority. It's talking about the essential nature that each one has. The Hebrew word for glory here means something that is beautiful. It means something that is radiant. God finds both strength and splendor, something that is beautiful. It's not hierarchical. Each generation has unique qualities the other lacks and needs. If you're a younger believer, older believers are not part of a bygone era. They are not relics. They are, in fact, a library, a repository of experience. Many have walked through with God through crises you have yet to face. Many people in this room have gone through cultural hostility. They've experienced grief. They've experienced confusion in life. They've experienced seasons where faithfulness has cost them something. And there are people in this room that probably come from areas of the world where their faith might have cost them everything. What they carry now has been tested through many, many years. Do not isolate yourself amongst peers of your own age. And I get it. It is easier to stick around people of your own age. And to be honest, if I was 20 and I was 60, I wouldn't want to hang around me and my 3-year-old either. But if we seek out those who have walked further with Christ, if we don't isolate ourselves, we can ask questions of how God has sustained them through hardship. We can ask what they wish they had known earlier, and we can receive that wisdom. Even if the way that the older generations may share that wisdom might seem unfamiliar, it's important to remember that it's about a gift. It's not about the wrapping. And if you're an older believer, resist the urge to dismiss the younger generations. The questions that younger people ask are genuine. Many young Christians live where faith is not only unfashionable, but it is challenged. With friendship groups where Christianity is often seen as something that is harmful, and workplaces where convictions render them vulnerable. Some young people have chosen Christ at a greater cost than most older generations would have ever really known. A faith defended in a hostile environment possesses strength that inherited faith sometimes lacks. Be curious about what younger people are reading. Inquire about what is challenging them. Listen before you speak. And most importantly, let the younger generations surprise you. They will if you allow them to. When both sides embrace these principles, when the young honor the old and the old invest in the young, the church becomes something the world cannot easily explain. In a society divided by age and tribes, a community where generations learn and serve together becomes a powerful testament to the gospel's reconciling power. It is not merely an organized program. What makes the church work is a miracle, and it's a miracle the world desperately needs to see. So how do we share wisdom across generations? Verse 5 reads, "The purpose in a man's heart is like deep water, but a man of understanding will draw it out." Let me be honest with you. I see this myself. In my role here at All Souls, I am privileged to be surrounded by people with decades of life experience, of leadership experience both in the church and outside the church, of ministry experience, people who have faced challenges I haven't experienced yet. And what strikes me is not just their wisdom, but their willingness to invest it in me. They ask me how I'm doing, and they genuinely wait for the answer, and they care about the answer. They challenge assumptions I didn't realize I held. They convict me. They encourage me when I'm tempted to doubt myself. And because that encouragement comes from people who have seen far more than I have, it carries a weight that my title could not give me. I didn't earn that investment. They don't owe me anything, but it has shaped me. And that's what mentorship is about. It draws wisdom out of one life and it pours it into another. The people I'm talking about did not have to do this. They have nothing to prove. They do it because somewhere along the line, someone else did it for them. And they understand that perhaps without ever saying it out loud, that wisdom is not something to be hoarded. It is a gift meant for the next generation. And I would like to take the opportunity, and the people who do invest in my life know who they are. And I'd like to say to you, thank you this morning. You are doing something more significant than you realize. You are living out Proverbs. And if you're younger and sitting next to someone like that today, are you making the most of it? The resources we have in the older generation will not always be with us. The moment you need it most might be the moment you wish you'd asked it sooner. Verse 5 says, "The purpose of the heart are like deep water. They're there, but they often remain hidden. A wise person helps draw it out." This is what intergenerational discipleship often looks like. It's not about creating carbon copies of one generation on another generation. It's about helping someone discover the calling God has already placed on their lives. And verse 18 reminds us why this matters. It reminds us that plans are established by counsel, by wise guidance, wage war. Life is too complex to navigate it alone. We are meant to do it intergenerationally within community. God has meant wisdom to be shared. So if you're an older believer, consider investing in one younger believer. Invite them for a cup of coffee. Ask about their story. Listen before you give advice and share your failures as your successes. Your failures are important. Often the failures will teach us much, much more than what you've actually achieved. You could say, let's grab 20 minutes together sometime. I'd love to hear your story. Sometimes a gentle, specific invitation is all it takes. And if you're a younger believer, don't try to figure out life alone. It's not meant to happen that way. There are people in this church community who have walked the path you are beginning to walk. Ask them questions and seek their counsel. Wisdom is one of the greatest gifts that the church can give us, but it rarely comes to those who never ask for it. So in closing, the gospel has always moved from generation to generation. God promised Abraham that his blessing would reach countless descendants. The Christian faith has been handed on person to person for 2,000 years. Someone handed the gospel to you, maybe a parent, maybe it was a friend, maybe it was a pastor or a mentor. And behind them stands a chain of witnesses all the way back to the empty tomb outside Jerusalem. Now it's your turn to carry it forward. That is possible because of Jesus Christ. He is the perfectly honored Father. He is the truly faithful man whose righteousness blesses every generation. In him, all wisdom of God is found, and from him it flows to every member of his body, no matter their age or background or how many years they have walked with him. When the church lives as he intended, when all the believers invest in the young and the young honor those who came before, the church becomes something beautiful in a city like London, where society sorts us by class, by tribe, and by generation. A congregation where young and old walk together is a powerful witness. It points to something the world can't make on its own. It points to the gospel's power of revelation. So as I leave it there today, don't leave it there. Don't do nothing. Don't just walk out unchanged. Cross the generational line this Sunday. Cross the generational line this week. Ask that one question. Listen to that one story. That is how the torch of faith passes from one generation to the next. So whose story are you going to seek out this week? Amen.